Welcome to Celebrity Book Club,
the podcast where we read the memoirs of pop culture icons so you don't have to.
I'm Kara.
And I'm Carrie. And today's book is
Yes, Please by Amy Poehler. Why every time do I think I can do that without a script and I cannot?
I think we say the same thing each week.
The same
thing. We change two words. Why do we not have it memorized?
I do not know.
Well, listeners, you probably guessed it from our clues. You may have guessed it from the beginning of the season. These two best friends are bookending season two with a story of two other best friends. You remember our gripping episode on Tina Fey this week.
Gripping?
Gripping.
I think so. It was one of my favorite ones that we did.
I feel like we came back with a vengeance that
people
week.
Texted me about that episode.
Yeah, I had multiple people reach out about that episode. So our gripping, I say again, gripping, hard-hitting journalism on One Tina Fey is now matched with a nuanced analysis of Amy Poehler and her book, Yes, Please.
Mm-hmm.
A book that she hated writing.
Yeah, she talks about that nonstop throughout this, about how hard it was. And I was like, no one's making you. I mean, maybe a publisher came to you
I think
was like...
her book advance probably was making her write that book and she didn't want to return it.
Of course. How much is a book advance? Like 10 grand?
I think for a celebrity,
it's probably more.
A celebrity, it's like lots of money, I would imagine.
That's insane to me. They already have so much money. Okay,
so much money.
This is my whole thing of like when brands send celebrities free shit, I'm like, they have money. They can buy your $60 lotion. I cannot. Send me skincare goop.
If you and your goop.
As an example.
If I ran a high-end luxury product of any kind, if I had a brand, I would send it to normal people.
That's what you want. You want the exclusivity. You want the thing of like, well, so-and-so who I'm trying to like be as cool as
that's
has
thing.
This thing. So that's what I'm going to save up for instead of subscribing to Disney Plus, you know?
Well, let's talk about Amy Poehler.
Let's do it.
So to be clear, we both have previously read this book and we reviewed this book to
refresh ourselves.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So yes. Very similar to Bossy Pants.
Mm-hmm.
But we're going to break it down a little like our Rachel Bloom episode and just talk about a few key things from this book rather than a full guess that chapter, because it would be very easy for us to guess said chapter because we both read it.
Agreed.
Kara, let's talk about Amy Poehler. Why don't you start for me? What's your relation with her?
Great. She was sort of, I guess, in her heyday when I began watching SNL.
Yep.
In high school, the Colonel Angus sketch remains one of my favorites to this day. So I think that was when I first became aware of her. And then I guess in college, I started watching Parks and Rec. I didn't watch it like immediately, but like a few years after it had been on, I picked it up and I was like, oh, this is cute and this is fun. And yeah. And then I think also because of my my false idol worship of Tina Fey in my adolescence.
False idol.
I needed to make it sound really dramatic.
No, it's very good.
Because I stand Tina Fey as a teenager, I was also aware of Amy Poehler because of their friendship.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember, this is an unbelievably embarrassing fact, but I remember I was out of college and I was texting you about Parks and Recreation, or probably like an instant message or something, because... As is notable in our relationship, you didn't have free texting for a long time.
I did not, correct.
That does not need to be included.
It does. Everyone should know my plight.
What an obscure detail. But I texted you, Leslie Knope is like me to your Liz Lemon, which, while embarrassing for both of us, I want to be very
true
clear.
At the time.
It was, but like, I'm nothing like Leslie Knope.
No, you're ambitious, but like, that's pretty much it.
That's it. No, I'm not cheerful. I am
no.
much closer.
I'm not cheerful. She
I'm
sneered.
Much closer to an Aubrey Plaza. Let's be very clear. I'm Tom Haverford on that show.
Oh, 1,000%. And I'm Donna.
And that's our actual dynamic. But there was very much a time circa 2008, 2012, 2013, mm-hmm. where many young women thought they were Leslie Knope. And mine was a very small blip where I thought that. And then I saw everybody else that was saying that. And I went, oh, never
mind. I'm not like you.
No, I cannot be lumped in this pile. But that's because I'm a judgy little bitch. So my story with Amy Poehler is very similar. One of the most memorable parts of Tina Fey's book to me is when Tina describes like Amy's first day at SNL and the I don't care if you like it
mm-hmm.
bit. Yeah. Like someone was
that was her first day.
Yeah, it's like her first day.
Oh, I love
it's
that.
Like Amy Poehler said a joke and like a man tried to tell her like it wasn't that funny. And she's like,
it was Seth Meyers.
Like it was Seth Meyers. That's what I thought. I thought it was Seth Meyers.
Because
which is so funny because they have such a strong, great relationship
now. And also I think I told you this, but this is, I think, the first time I'm admitting this on the pod. It's really embarrassing. Seth Meyers is the one dude that I would have sex with.
Oh, I don't think that's that embarrassing at all.
Oh, really?
Mm-mm.
It, Seth like, grosses Myers, me out to say the sentence. But I'm like, Seth if
Myers
I had to.
has the lips of a woman, to be clear.
He does.
Also, I adore Seth Meyers. Like, I just think he's such a sweet little baby angel. So, yeah.
He got me through the beginning of the pandemic. I did not watch the news, but I did watch his show.
That's great.
To get the news.
Yeah, he's fantastic.
Anyway.
Sorry. No, I'm glad. I think that was useful information to share. Yeah, so I think my story with Amy Poehler is very similar. I remember seeing Tina and Amy hosting Weekend Update together and being like, oh, this is so they're cool. Funny. But it's cool, yeah. And it's like peak. Oh, my God, there are two women doing this. Yeah, they both are so girl boss adjacent. And I do think that Amy Poehler tries to listen when other people challenge her on mm-hmm. her girl boss adjacency.
True.
And I do think it's a good time to bring up that I requested you watch the Netflix film Moxie,
which wrote and directed.
She wrote and directed and, mm-hmm. and has a small role in, which just came out fairly recently. And I was just like, I think that needs to be a part of how we approach a modern Amy Poehler conversation, because this book came out in
2014. It was 2014, which surprised me. I didn't read it, I don't think, until 2016 or 2017.
Same.
I had it for like years. I bought it when it came out and then I just didn't read it for many years. The bottom is coffee stained because it used to be in a pile of books on my nightstand that I spilled coffee all over.
Sure.
And it's also like hefty. I know you have the audiobook, but like the pages themselves are all the center fold pictures.
Yeah.
Like that's the weight of the sheets. She thick. Yes. And like, it doesn't need to be. There's like enough in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. You did tell me to watch that movie. I watched about 25 minutes of it and it wasn't like bad. It's so bad that I was like, I have to turn this off. But I was also just like not feeling it. And it was that thing that I put on like while I was making dinner and then I finished my food. And then I was like, okay, I'm done with this. I'm going to bed.
Why would you continue watching it? Yeah.
Yeah.
I watched the whole thing and I kind of liked it.
Okay, great.
We've talked a little offline about this, but like, I don't know who it's for.
Yeah. It doesn't seem it. At first I was like, okay, is this a primer for like moms who thought they were cool to like understand their Gen Z children?
Yeah. So it's a movie about teenagers and like kind of a feminist revolution among teenagers that is like sparked through one kid writing a zine and the sort of like feminist revolution that comes with it.
Yes.
And
what that looks like in Gen Z.
Yeah. And I think it nails some parts of it, but like I work with middle and high schoolers and I can't imagine one of them turning it on. Like, I don't think they're clicking that link.
Right.
So I don't know who it's for, but I enjoyed it.
Then it's like, is it for like younger kids? Like maybe like 8 to 12 year olds who...
Well, that's what I was thinking. Like a lot of high school movies and shows aren't actually that interesting to high schoolers. By that, like, I think the most content I watched about high school, I was in middle school for. True, but I true, still true. Like my middle schoolers aren't watching that movie.
Mm, fair.
Even though I think they would like parts of it, but like I can't see them turning it on.
They wouldn't walk away from it being like, cool.
No. And they would feel like it was too preachy. But so some good things within it, like there are acknowledgments of how race plays a role in feminism. There is some trans inclusion in their feminism. Okay. Like there are intersections there, and it's trying to do something. I don't think it's bad, but it feels very representative of Amy Poehler to me, of like
getting 60% of something.
Yeah. And like, it's very well-meaning.
Totally.
And
it was very earnest. It had a lot of heart.
I think that's my issue with Amy Poehler. And while I'll still turn to some Tina Fey stuff, is because it's not earnest. She's too earnest. She believes that people are good at their core. And I don't.
Carrie does not believe that.
I don't.
It's so funny too, because I think that like those are sort of, if we're, you know, doing this in this way, when we did the Tina Fey episode, we talked about how Liz Lemon was in some ways our revolutionary character, because it was like, look, it's a woman who like doesn't care if she's like measuring up to the system or whatever. And there's that cynicism. And then this, whenever Parks and Rec came out and like sort of bloomed into what it is, it was this whole wave of like earnest television, like earnest network characters. And that spawned Brooklyn Nine-Nine and like The Good Life and those other Mike Schur shows that have a lot of like heart and don't rely on that cynicism of like the early mid 2000s.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Both of which I think are valid, and both of which I think there are good and bad examples. But it is interesting that vibe of hers, that earnestness, which I feel like, especially in the beginning, carried a lot of Parks and Rec.
Oh, absolutely.
Is showing through in her other work.
Yeah. And I do not want to, these are two women who can stand on their own, and Tina Fey pretty much got to stand on her own. And I feel like we're defining a lot of Amy Poehler based off of Tina Fey.
Yeah.
And I'm going to continue to do that, but I also want to like find some moments where I'm not doing that.
Sure.
But like Moxie feels like her version of Mean Girls.
Mm.
Like it's a teen story. Like
anti.
Yeah. But the inclusion practices are great, but it's too neat. It's too joyful. It's too earnest.
And I will be the first person to admit that earnestness done in a specific way works for me.
Absolutely.
1,000% of the time. But yeah, it just depends. It depends on the package.
Yeah. So
all that to say,
those are our initial thoughts on Amy Poehler. I remember going into this book being very excited, because I think this was still relatively early in my celebrity memoir phase. And I remember laughing out loud at Tina Fey's book. And I feel so like, I feel like shitty that I'm not letting Amy Poehler be her own person, but
it's okay. She has a lot of money. She doesn't need us.
Yeah, that's a good point. She has a lot of money. I went into this book hoping for some nonstop laughter, and instead I got very earnest Amy, which...
For a second, I thought you were going to say amazing Amy.
No, I would have rather had amazing Amy. Like, I will always choose amazing Amy over earnest Amy. I want to be very clear. Earnest Amy, I don't think ages particularly well. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's the overall takeaway from revisiting this book, is like, whoo, do some parts of it not age great?
Yeah. There's a sheen to it of like, that's very, not to use this phrase, but like, let's just be honest. There's like a sheen of very like pre-Trumpism to it.
Yes.
When like,
you can't unsee it.
Yeah. And like, I think in a lot of ways, all media pre-Trump will be dated in that way, in like,
yeah,
in this, not tone deaf, because not all of it is, but like in a way that is,
it's rose-colored glasses for sure.
Yeah, it's wanting to assume the best of people.
It's the balloons at the Javits Center again. Like it goes back. sorry, it always goes back to the Javits Center for me. But like the audacity to think that problems were solved was a very 2014 belief of like, oh, it's fixed.
Obama's president. Twice we did it.
We did it.
There's no more racism.
We did it. There's no more racism. Women are hosting the Oscars. Anything is possible.
Yes. God. I was about to say what I wouldn't give to go back to like 2014, but honestly, I would not.
It would be, okay, pitch for a not great movie, but just a teen time travel movie where they go back 10 years. Like they don't even go back that far. And they're just like, the fuck is this?
Wait, I'm obsessed with that.
Yeah.
Like a la Hot Tub Time Machine. It's like a bro comedy, but for like teenagers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because Gen Z needs bro comedies.
So, Kara, you reread some of this book.
I did.
I reread some of this book.
You did.
What was one thing that struck you reading it a second time around?
Something that I do appreciate about this book is there is a chapter pretty early on in it where she talks about her one sketch that she regrets doing when she was on SNL. And a lot of celebrities, we've read so many at this point, a lot of celebrities do that thing where they reference a talked about moment in their career and sort of use it to like defend themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Like Matthew McConaughey in The Bongo's Arrest when he was like naked, he sort of, you know, uses his book to like clear his name of that.
That man played bongos naked everywhere. Just ask Gabrielle Union.
And she doesn't do that. She owns up to her mistake. The long and short of what happened is she does a sketch where she's playing a young Dakota Fanning who's supposed to be like very mature for her age, and makes a reference to a movie about disabled girl.
Yep.
And in the chapter, she expresses at the time of the sketch
that she has a line to read, but she doesn't know the reference.
Correct. Yeah. So she thinks that the writers have just made up this movie that is like some obscure thing that Dakota Fanning is referencing. And after the episode airs, she gets a letter from the writer and director of that film who wrote this movie based on a true story called Hurricane Mary about a disabled girl and how hurt not only the director was, but she was in contact with the
parent, right?
The parents and the young girl about who this movie was based on. And she's like, I knew that because Hillary Clinton was on the episode that night. She was like, I knew that she was watching and I knew that she saw people make fun of this movie that was about her. And it was like a laugh line. She was like, and so it just felt kind of shitty. And like, I wish not just you, but like, I wish all comedians didn't make jokes like that.
Yeah.
And she was like, I talked to some people at work about it, kind of with a thing of like, can you believe this? Like, I didn't know this was a thing. And people at work being like, oh, well, we thought that you like knew it was a real movie. Like, sorry, like,
yeah,
that sucks. But like, you didn't know. So like, it's not your fault, basically. She talks about how she showed it around to people at SNL and basically wanted absolution to like hear that she was right.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Then years later, she talks about meeting a mutual friend of this director. The mutual friend was Spike Jonze. And she tells him the story and he's like, I could reconnect you guys. Like, if you want to reach out and, you know, talk to her. It was like 5 years later at this point. So Spike Jonze does connect them through email and she, Amy Poehler, sort of has a chance to apologize. She includes the email from this woman, Marianne, and her email that she wrote back, as well as the email that the young girl who the movie was based on wrote back to her, thanking her for replying. And she even owns up to like rereading her email a few years later. She's like, rereading it now, I notice a few things. I get caught up in the facts. I was trying to defend myself. It felt good to try. Apologies have nothing to do with you. So she even at the time, like, admits that the email that she wrote apologizing was also still defensive.
Yeah.
And then it is, you know, sort of tied up neat with a bow because the young woman, Anastasia Somoza, writes to her and is like, I'm never expected this, but like, thank you so much. She does also talk about how she made a donation to an organization that was helping pay for her college.
Yeah.
Which I think some people might read as like, what do you want to pat on the back? But I think it's like,
she's modeling how to apologize and how to try to right a wrong as best you can.
Especially for someone with as much money as she has.
Yeah.
Like an apology helps, but like, if you want to actually like, if you feel bad, like I need money to go to college. And she does that. And it made me respect her a lot.
Yeah. It's really interesting to see all that behavior before like the dawn of the Notes app apology, a thing that I think we're like constantly living in we are constantly experiencing celebrities apologizing for something.
Yeah.
And there's such a formula and a ritual to it now that all the weight has been sucked out of it.
Yeah.
You have to work really hard. And so for her to sort of do all of this and to include it in her story, there are not a lot of people who would read Amy Poehler's book looking for her to own up to that moment.
Right.
She took the time and space to acknowledge a mistake that she made. Mm-hmm. And you're right. It's like pretty early in the book, right?
Yeah. It's there's sort of like three sections, like mm-hmm. three parts, and it's in the first part before she really even talks about like what it was like working at SNL. It's not like everything at SNL was great, but this is a dark chapter, you know? Like very early on, and she mentions how she feels bad for it. She acknowledges she made a mistake and she talks about what she did too.
Yeah, I think that's a really good thing that she did.
Agreed. And I hope that other people, I'm thinking mostly about celebrities, but also any people who have misspoken, even if they didn't realize it, can learn from that.
Yeah.
Because again, you know, it's not like she knew the joke that she was making, but she still knew that it was harmful.
Or she very quickly learned that it was harmful. Like often you do things and you don't realize it's hurtful to someone. I can think of casual jokes that I made. And then I met people who had different life experiences who those jokes affected. And it's like, I can't believe anymore.
I used to joke about that.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Just didn't. And it comes from a place of not knowing. And it is your job as the person who harmed someone to fix it. And it is not up to anyone to like accept that, yeah. But you've got to do what you can and figure out how to deal with yourself. So I think it's really good that she includes that. That feels like a rare moment where the 2014-ness of this isn't shine. Like it's almost the opposite. Like I would expect that in someone's story now.
Yeah. I remember reading it at the time and being like, oh, I'm very surprised that this is in here.
Something that stuck out to me upon review and really has stuck with me since the initial read is Amy Poehler's taste in men.
Let's discuss.
She talks a lot about her relationship with Matt Besser.
Oh, yeah.
Matt Besser, who like did a ton with UCB with her.
Mm-hmm.
If you listeners, I need you to take out your phone that you're listening to this podcast on. I need you to type Matt Besser into Google Images or your preferred search engine. And I need you to look at this man. And I just need you to process that.
I don't know that I know what he looks like outside of like a picture in the book.
Yeah, no, I need you to look at what Matt Besser looks like because he's been in everything. He has like bit parts in all of those like Mike Schur type shows.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
He is Crazy Ira of Crazy Ira and the Douche.
Yes.
And at the time of this book writing, Amy Poehler was dating Nick Kroll. So she has dated both Crazy Ira and the Douche and then was married to Will Arnett in the middle there. So talk about a woman who has, I was going to say who has no type, but obviously she has a type and that is white.
White and loud.
White and loud. Amy Poehler wants to fuck me too, it seems.
White and loud.
So like she's clearly drawn to people who are funny. Like she values comedy, which I respect. Mm-hmm. I think that it's good to know what you like. A thing that I kind of want to talk about in this. A thing I like about the book is how she doesn't talk about her relationship with Will Arnett, but does give those alternate titles. She goes through and gives like things I would call this chapter if I were writing about my marriage.
Yes. She does write about her divorce, though, a little bit.
Yeah.
And about how hard it was.
Yeah. She has a really good one that is like, one of the titles is like, I hate you, but I still need you to like pick up the kids at 2:30 or whatever. Uh-huh. It's something like that. And that has stuck with me of like, whew, that must have been hard.
Yeah. The line that sticks with me from this book that I feel like I've mentioned on another podcast is when she's talking about her like tips for dating. Mm-hmm. And she has tips for women and tips for men. And the very last one on that ends the chapter on her tips for men is, if you don't eat pussy, keep walking.
Yeah.
And I have thought of that many often, times.
Yeah. My thing with Amy Poehler and relationships, and this could go for Jennifer Lopez and relationships, this could go for really any celebrity and relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Can they be in long-term relationships? Like, when you do you hit a point where you have so much fame? And I've seen it described on the internet as people who are like, you see so many more celebrities getting divorces because women finally have access to money and they can make their choices.
Mm.
And maybe this is just a very naive, like hyper wife guy thing for me to say, but like, do they ever just like, can they not like each other and stay with each other? Like, and I mean, there are like Sarah Michelle Gellar and Freddie Prinze Jr. are still doing it. So it's okay. But like,
Very recently, actually, I watched an interview with Jennifer Garner where she talked about her recent split from Ben Affleck. And someone asked her that question. Basically, they were like, you're both such high profile celebrities. Like, without saying this, they were like, how long did you hold on? Because you didn't want to be another celebrity couple getting a divorce. Yeah. And she was like, that didn't really factor into it. And she was like, but early on, she was like, I think what brings a lot of celebrities together is that you do have this understanding of this world and this mm-hmm. life that not a lot of people do. But then there's also so much pressure from the media, from fans, from now I'm sure with like social media, which wasn't really a thing when they got together. But like,
yeah.
She was like, there's so much like, well, when are you going to get married? And when are you going to do this? And like, his new movie's coming out. What are you doing next? There's so much external pressure that it sometimes pushes things together before they're ready.
Yeah.
And then you find yourself 10 years into a marriage with someone who might not be the best long-term partner for you.
Yeah. You don't really see a lot of people who get like 5 years of dating before they get married.
Yeah. And so I keep thinking about that. I keep coming back to that of like, even people who, I mean, I think at the time they got married, Amy Poehler and Will Arnett were not household names.
No.
Even though they both had careers at that point, I don't think they were getting, it wasn't like Beyonce on the street. Like, it was not that. But I'm sure even like in their personal lives, there were.
I'm laughing at Beyonce.
Are you happy to be in Paris? There wasn't that, maybe in their personal lives, like from mutual friends, there was that thing of like, oh, you know, you guys are dating. Like, when are you gonna blah?
Yeah.
Maybe that was a factor. I'm not really here to speculate about that, but I have thought about that interview with Jennifer Garner frequently and about how external factors push people together sometimes before they're ready.
Also, some people just have kind of bad taste. I think about Will Arnett in the Jessica Walter interview and I go, oh, I see why this didn't work. And I think about Nick Kroll's existence and I know why that didn't work.
I know you're not. I love Nick Kroll. I am a big fan of Nick Kroll. Not all of his work.
Here's the thing. Everyone I love in this world, like every comedian that I like and respect, likes and respects Nick Kroll. And I genuinely like Big Mouth. Like, I think it has things to say about puberty and it respects kids and what young people are going through in a way that like a lot of things don't. There's a recent Seth Rogen profile that came out where he talks about like the value of adolescence and how people keep trying to like push it away, but it's actually, I have been right for so many years about Seth Rogen and now the internet is on my side. It's like Steve Carell all over again. but like, so I see the value in Nick Kroll and then there's once in a while he does a thing that proves me right where I'm like,
yeah,
so you're something doesn't quite work. Most of it works, but there's just some red flags that stay popping
off.
That's
fair. That's valid. And they were together for a long time, I feel like.
I think most, she has these like 5 year plus relationships with people and then they just kind of fizzle. And that's the thing. And this must sound so naive. There must be people who listen and are like, you dumb girl. Like, I have such a hard time imagining spending 5 years with a person and then being like, oh, this didn't work. I guess we have to detangle our entire lives from one another. Oh, it just seems exhausting.
So you would stay.
This is exactly, I knew that was coming next. Just like, I don't know, but maybe I would. It's so hard.
I know.
You can't. No, I can't. And that's the thing.
But that's the thing. It's not like she's gotten married 700 times like Elizabeth Taylor.
No, she clearly also like, she had kids with Will Arnett. She like, you don't have kids with someone in, that's not true. In a lot of situations, you wouldn't choose to have kids with someone who you thought things were gonna like wrap it up with.
You know what I think this is? And again, who am I to judge anyone's relationship? I think this is an Angelina Billy Bob.
Yeah. Oh, I absolutely do. I think there are lots of things that happened there, but Amy Poehler became Amy Poehler and he stayed Will Arnett.
The voice of the Reese's like, commercial.
The voice of Lego Batman, the host of Lego Masters on Fox. Yeah, that's a reality show about people being building Lego stuff. I watched the whole thing. He was a pretty charming host on it.
The thing is, and see, you know me. Carrie's known me for a very long time. Mm-hmm. A lot of people who know me would say that I give people too many chances.
Correct.
More recently, I've entered into the phase of my life where I'm like, I have plenty of great friends. If you suck and you do something that I think sucks, I'll like talk to you about it. But like, if you know, fuck you.
Yeah.
I was at that point in my life when the Jessica Walter interview happened. And that for me was the fuck you of Will Arnett. And now I hate his guts.
You've written them all off.
I hate his guts. I hate Bateman's guts. Tony Hale, very hard for me. He was the least, what's that word? Implicable, but he was still guilty in a way that makes me feel icky.
Yeah. Jason Bateman is.
When will society progress past the need for Jason Bateman?
We don't need a Jason Bateman in our lives. Lies are
still on TV.
We'll be anyway. Just-
okay. We're not here to debate.
We are not here to discuss Ozark. We're here to talk about Amy Poehler. So I find myself sort of fascinated by the way she talks about relationships in this book. And I remember reading the book and her talking about Nick Kroll, because she just calls him her boyfriend in it. I'm just like, you're really going to put that in print? The judgy version of me, the person who is still like, oh, all these hoes think they're Leslie Knope, is like, you're going to write down your boyfriend so you have to remember him? How are you going to forget that he was a part of your life? But I guess if you're a celebrity, you can never really forget that you had relationships.
Because there's pictures of you on red carpets with them. And that, you know, they're in Getty Images forever.
Getty's got them.
There's not a Getty image of me with every shithead I've dated.
Oh my God. Imagine if every relationship you had was documented on Getty Images. It's hard enough.
That it's on Facebook. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Facebook. Facebook, colon, the Getty Images for the common average people. For the common.
I should start watermarking all of my pictures with Facebook. Yeah, so I imagine that must be hard. And it's so funny that you say that because you're like, I wouldn't. But I mean, you know, what's the alternative? You say, I didn't put you in my book because I don't think we're going to be together forever.
Yeah, I remember Lena Dunham did the same thing, like wrote a lot about Jack Antonoff in her book. And I'm like, well, y'all aren't together now.
It stresses me out so much that so many songs I love by Bleachers must be about Lena Dunham. It stresses me out! I'm like, is Reckless Love about Lena Dunham? If it is, I will kill myself. Like, no!
Oh, it can't be. Okay, I think we have one more thing to talk about with this book, and that is perhaps the most problematic thing.
We're going from least problematic to most problematic here.
Yeah. We're steadily in the middle with her relationships. And now we turn to someone that she describes as a friend and a mentor.
Folks, we're talking about Louis C.K.
You know, classic mentor. I only masturbated in front of them with their consent. I asked each and every one.
And this is the thing, right? Like, I will be the first person to admit I have been friends with people like Louis C.K. I'm no longer friends with that person, those people. It took me way longer than I should have to acknowledge their behavior as not okay.
Yeah.
And to recognize that it was something beyond just like, oh, you're so quirky. A lot of it I didn't know about, but that doesn't excuse what I did know about.
Yep.
And I find myself once again at the place of, she must have meant it and felt it in the moment in the way that she was in a relationship with Nick Kroll when she wrote this book.
Yeah. Yeah. These books are always time capsules in the same way that not defending at all the way Michael J. Fox says
that Woody Allen is a great guy. Really
threw himself into the work. Yeah. He had so much going on in his personal life, but he just threw himself into the work.
And that's kind of where I land with all of it, especially as like her being a woman who was friends with him and apparently close enough friends with him that he was like, you know, came on her show and like,
yeah,
comedically seems to have been a huge influence on her.
I remember a lot of Sarah Silverman's reaction to the Louis C.K. stuff. I feel like her comments were really widely talked about.
Oh, yeah. She's saying he used to masturbate in front of her with consent.
Yeah.
And so she's like, I'm not going to, you know, deny anyone's experience. I'm not saying what he did was okay. I'm just saying at a certain point when he became influential, not even famous, but influential in the world of comedy, it changes. He felt like he was the same person, but the dynamic was different and it was not okay.
I'm not here to kink shame anyone, but I have enough shame living in myself that some of it just leaks out every once in a while. And imagine that man asking you, oh, hey, is it cool if I like just like masturbate in front of you? It couldn't be me, is all I'm saying. That Catholicism runs a bit too deep for that.
Honestly, Carrie, we complain about our Catholicism so much. I think it's protected us from a lot.
I often think that that is true. Like
the judgmental voices of our mothers live in our heads rent free and we cannot get them out.
No. And I think, sorry, mom. I do think that has like kept me safe. It doesn't mean that it should.
No, nor should I like have to think that way.
That's it. That's it. Like I shouldn't have to think that way in order to like be safe and function. But I do recognize the benefits it has given me in my life. But trying to be understanding, like, if there's consent involved, if that worked for them, I guess that's fine. But I do remember Sarah Silverman talking about all that. And I don't really remember how Amy Poehler reacted or has ever commented on it. And I do know that, like, that's my Mama Let's research of it all is.
That's very valid.
I want to see where she is now.
Totally. In one of his very famous comedy specials, among other things that white men should not say, one of the things that he did say that I used to like remember sometimes in times of trouble as like a positive thing was if you hurt somebody's feelings, if somebody tells you that you hurt their feelings, you don't get to decide that you didn't.
Mm.
And
it's funny because I don't think he would say that now.
And it's just so interesting to me. I think about that a lot.
There are examples like that of other, like the Aziz of it all is like another person who,
on a different part of the spectrum, but like still,
who did a lot of work in his comedy around uplifting women's voices and women's experiences. And didn't recognize how his behavior played a role in it. And rather than reflect on that, he chose to instead reflect on the Twitter mob and the Twitter reaction or the internet backlash. And sort of like, it's interesting how these people who at one point in time, while they were abusing their power, had a nuanced understanding of what other people were experiencing like, and were able to empathize, like, were capable of empathy. They were doing terrible things, but they were capable of empathy. And then when they were called out, that empathy shut off.
And it became, but that's not applicable to me.
Yeah. And instead it was, no, but I'm different and here's how. And instead, like, these are the people who, like, cry cancel culture now.
Exactly. She refers to him in this chapter that I was talking about apologizing. And this sentence says, my friend Louis C.K. likes to say that, quote, guilt is an intersection. Getting out of it means making a choice and moving forward. Which is, like, just a hilarious little time capsule. And by hilarious, I mean it makes me taste bile in my mouth.
Yeah, I'm like, I am a little sick thinking about all of this.
Yeah.
Because that's a person who thought about actions and consequences.
And now doesn't seem to do that.
No.
Something that I meant to say earlier that I forgot about during the her past relationships section. I think the reason that she dated every single one of those people is because she's from Boston.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Like, this is an anti-Boston podcast.
Yeah, absolutely.
So sorry if you live in Boston and you listen, but your town sucks. And I think all those people that she dated are probably like people that she grew up with in Boston, and therefore
white and loud.
That is Boston.
That's the Boston way.
White and loud.
We're white and we're loud.
So anyway, had to get that zinger in there while I was still thinking about it.
No, I'm really glad you brought that up. But it does seem like a good time to maybe do some research.
I think so. I would like to see what Miss AP is up to these days.
Okay, Mama, let's research. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back with more Celebrity Book Club.
This episode of Celebrity Book Club is brought to you by Nicole Kidman thinking about death. If I was married to Keith Urban, I would have existential dread too.
Hey friends,
Celebrity Book Club has merch now.
You can find links to buy shirts, stickers, tote bags, and more on all our socials.
Check it out at Celeb Book Pod on Twitter and Instagram. Mama, what did you research?
I looked up some of the commentary on Amy Poehler and Aziz Ansari's response to the Louis C.K. allegations.
Mm.
This one article in particular from junkie.com. It's not a website I'm familiar with, but it seems legit. Is singling out Amy and Aziz because of their collaboration with Louis C.K. in the past, and also because, not that this is a crime or anything, but they do share a manager, and so they're wondering if, like, that comes into play at all. They do mention, which I believe you said, about how Aziz Ansari has sort of built this brand on, like, I'm a woke guy and I'm a feminist and I'm on your side. And so it's hard for, especially when he was asked in an interview directly, like, do you want to comment? And he said he wasn't going to talk about it. It is hard to, like, reconcile those two things. And, like,
well, I think it's proven why.
Exactly. And because there is a spectrum of behavior, he falls on a different part of the spectrum than Louis C.K. does. But it's still a similar type of predatory behavior, of entitled behavior.
Yeah. I mean, we've pretty much decided we're never covering modern romance, Aziz's book, on here. So, like, this is the time to do it. If anything, of, like, so much of Aziz's behavior strikes me as someone who didn't know that what they were doing was wrong.
Right. Which is, like, almost worse.
So my thing is, his response to it and leaning on the fact that he didn't know what he was doing is wrong is what makes it worse.
Right.
But, like, if he had said, I really didn't know, I am working to learn this, and in my, you know what, and even, like, make money off of it, go, like, I'm writing a second book of, like, the pitfalls of modern romance, and talk about predatory behavior and entitled behavior and all of those things. Like, that's your mini Aziz episode in the middle of this Amy Poehler one.
Yeah. But Amy's response specifically, she was reached out to by various journalists, the New York Times, people from the Huffington Post, and they never even received a response back from Amy. And so I'm very interested to know, had her book been published a year or two later, if it would be commented on. She seems like, and in that, you know, chapter we talked about earlier, she seems like she is a person who is willing to admit her mistakes, even if it takes her a while. So I'd be interested to see.
Yeah. So I read a Hollywood Reporter profile about Amy Poehler in 2019. Mm. And in the first section of the article, like third paragraph down, the author Marissa Guthrie writes, "Also, please don't ask her to explain the bad behavior of men, namely Louis C.K., even if they were friends and share a manager." And then it quotes from Amy Poehler, "Women seem to be, unfortunately, the ones that have to have the answers, whether or not we want to be the ones with the answers."
It's very white feminist of her.
And it's, so this is 2019, so she's had a few years to deal with it. I do feel that there is a point to be made of, like, talk to Louis C.K. about Louis C.K.'s problem.
Of course.
But if you have spent a portion of your career propping someone up, you do have to acknowledge how you feel about that person now.
Right.
And it's not like you're a private figure.
That's what I was about to say. I was like, we talk about this all the time about how when you are a celebrity, there are certain parts of yourself that you seed and that become available for public consumption. And that when the stakes change, when situations change, you are expected to comment on them. And yes, like, it's a violation in some ways, but also, like, that's the contract you've signed with society.
Yes.
To have the position that you do. And so you don't get to decide that you don't have an opinion.
Yeah. And the indignance of, like, I don't need to respond to this.
Yeah.
It's like, you aren't being asked because you're a woman. You aren't being asked this because you're even a female comedian. You are being asked this because in your book, you describe Louis C.K. as a friend and a mentor. You are being asked this because you have continued to partner with Louis C.K. on projects over the years. Like, you have established in print, in public, your positive feelings. If this was even a person that, like, maybe they were photographed once or twice together, but she had never written about him or never worked with him, like,
I would understand that response.
Absolutely. She doesn't owe a comment on every single person's bad behavior, right? But you do when you describe him as a friend and a mentor. And when you quote him in your book about, like, the importance of an apology.
Right. And, like, not that you are accountable for the behavior of every single person that you hang out with, and not that you have to have someone do this checklist, you know, of acceptable things before you're like, this person is my friend now. People want to reduce it to that because that it's the floodgates argument, right?
But Kara, if you and I are not famous, but we have publicly tied ourselves together,
right,
because of our creative partnership.
Right.
If you or I do something bad, the other one is going to have to comment on it.
Right.
Exactly. And maybe, and you know, you don't have to comment day one, but, like, I do think we as a society need to figure out, like, what our window on apologies is. Like,
yeah, the statute of limitations.
Yeah. And also, like, I just feel like we need, like, a headline breaks and you expect people to respond to it, even though there's processing time. It may be the first time they're hearing about it too. Exactly. I don't know. I don't know the right answer to any of that.
Yeah, but you're right. It's the 24-hour news cycle of it all. Like, as soon as something occurs, everyone is expected to have an opinion on it. And as we have learned, honestly, the, like, immediate reaction that you have to something usually isn't the most nuanced or informed take.
No.
And so I have no problem with people taking the time to, like, really figure out how they feel about something. But at this point, it's been almost 4 years.
Well, yeah. And this is like this is written in 2019. So yeah. You've had time to form an opinion, and your opinion is like, how dare you ask me about this?
Yeah.
Nah, that's the wrong choice.
Yeah. Agreed.
I will say that throughout the rest of this article, Amy Poehler does a good job of acknowledging, like, this is where I was on issues, and these are how other people pushed me. She's talking in particular about being an EP of Broad City.
Oh, interesting.
And basically she describes the story as this. They'd be doing a scene where they would be cleaning an apartment in their underwear. And I'd be like, you know, you guys don't have to be in your underwear. And they'd be like, we wrote this. my generation was like, wear baggy clothes when you improvise, be one of the guys, don't use your sexuality. And women younger than me are like, my sexuality is my own. I can use it however I want. It's one of the many things about me and I'm in control of it. And it's like, right.
And that's it. That's the difference.
But she is starting to get that. Like, this is the thing I will give her credit for is like, she tries to listen. She's trying to figure out how to talk about this stuff.
Yeah. How to navigate it.
Yeah. Yeah. She's not digging her heels in on most things.
Yeah.
Apparently on talking about Louis C.K. she is, but otherwise, like, she's trying. And we talked about Moxie before, but like, Moxie is an example of her trying. I don't think she's fully effective. And I am like almost skipping to, can we franchise this? But I don't think her singular voice in writing or directing a project is one that I particularly need. But I think she does have other things that she does really well.
Agreed. Agreed.
And I think her as a mentor, bringing other people up, helping use all the fame and power that she has to spotlight other creators.
Yeah.
Is when she's at her strongest, because it brings up in here, she was an executive producer of Russian Doll too.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Like,
that's cool. Yeah. She clearly has like a good, like, artistic eye of like, this is an interesting story. This is a fun voice. Like, let's get that out.
Make
there.
Her the new Scott Rudin.
Instead. Yes.
like become a production powerhouse instead.
Mm-hmm.
Because I do think that she's really good at finding things and listening to other people. I'm just not sure that I need her at the center of the story right now.
I think that's the conclusion we've come to this season about all white women, is that if you have made a name for yourself and you have some power behind you, produce interesting, diverse stories that aren't necessarily your point of view, but that you can get in front of a larger audience.
And I also think, like, particularly Amy Poehler has proven that she is a great advocate and supporter for creative individuals on the rise.
Yeah. And seems to really, she has that whole organization,
mm-hmm.
that like mentorship, like women's empowerment yeah. organization, Smart Girls or something, I think it's called.
Yes.
Which she does talk about in this book.
I think about that Busy Phillips story all the time about like,
yeah,
how she rescued her from that opening night of a movie that was really hers and had kind of gotten stolen from her, and like how great she is at doing yeah. that. And like,
she must really like see something in people, and that's always a good person to have in the room.
Yeah. Like. And like, that's, I want her to use her voice and her power in different ways than she's choosing to.
Yeah.
And not meaning that she's been doing it all wrong. I just like, I'm ready for her to pivot more into this. But also, like, it's her life, it's her choices. If she wants to keep writing things herself, go for it, I guess. I think I've had to hit a point now where it's like, I think I'd always rather see what someone else's take is on this same topic.
Totally.
All right. We're doing 6 Degrees of Don Cheadle.
Yes. Where we connect the subject of this week's pod to star of stage, screen, and other screen, Don Cheadle.
Yep. He's done it all. He likes all the screens. He likes all the stages. That's what we talk about when we talk about Don Cheadle. So Amy Poehler starred in Wet Hot American Summer 10 years later, maybe also the original.
Yes, she was in both. Yeah.
Yeah. Wet Hot American Summer is extremely not my thing, but she was in it. You know who else was in it? One of the loves of my life, Ken Marino.
That 100% tracks.
Noted star of season 5 of Dawson's Creek, where he played a professor that was hitting on Joey Potter. We don't talk about his work on Dawson's Creek enough, which is how I knew him first. I knew him first as a dramatic actor on the television program Dawson's Creek, not as noted comedian Ken Marino. He's also in the pre-show for Rock and Roller Coaster ride at Disney Hollywood Studios. But anyway, I just have to share Ken Marino facts.
No, I love those facts. Please.
Which we may have already shared on the pod previously, because we talked about Ken Marino when we talked about Burning Love and Amy Kaufman's book.
Very true. Very true.
But Amy Poehler, Ken Marino. Ken Marino stars on Black Monday with Don Cheadle.
That's awesome. Mine is Amy Poehler stars in Parks and Recreation with Ben Schwartz, who is in House of Lies with Don Cheadle. Oh, I really thought you were going to do Ben.
No, I should have thought about it. Because the entire reason why I probably care as much as I do about Don Cheadle is because I started watching House of Lies because I was so in love with Ben Schwartz that I needed to watch everything he had ever been on.
It's a disease and we both have it and it's
that's,
fine.
That's a tall-haired, funny man. That's my type.
Carrie loves tall hair.
Gotta be. The higher the hair.
The closer to Carrie's heart.
Exactly. Well, we don't have a guest that author for next week because next week will be our season two finale. A salute to Don Cheadle mm-hmm. and all the good he has done. Mm-hmm. So you're off the hook this week. Enjoy.
Enjoy.
Don't forget to rate and review, and you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at CelebBookPod.
Carrie is on Twitter and Instagram at CFostTalksALot. That's the letter C, Fost, talks a lot.
You can find Kara at _ KPRO. That's _ KAYPRO.
Questions, comments, concerns, send us an email at celebritybookpod@gmail.com.
Tell us what you loved, what you hated, and what you want us to read next.
Thanks for listening. This has been Celebrity Book Club.